You're listening to WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio, and this is RVA Report, WRIR's weekly current affairs talk show, where community thought and political leaders gather to weigh in on the headlines of the day, their significance, and where they might take us tomorrow.
In our city, there's a thousand things I want to say to you.
Virgil Kane is the name, and I served on the Danville train till Stallman's cavalry came and tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May 10th, Richmond had fell. It was a time I remember so well.
May 24th, 1861. Just days after Virginia's vote to secede from the Union, 24-year-old Colonel Elmer Ellsworth, a close personal friend of President Lincoln, led his troop of Union soldiers into Alexandria, Virginia. Ellsworth was intent not only on seizing the town, but on removing an 8x14 Confederate flag that was very visible from the White House. In the ensuing melee, Ellsworth was shot dead by the property owner, an avowed segregationist. Symbols are serious things, not to be trifled with. When a group here in Richmond, intent on celebrating Confederate pride, announced plans to hoist the Confederate battle flag on a 50-foot pole visible to visitors to the former capital of the Confederacy, our city's modern inhabitants reacted with a range of emotions. The so-called flaggers have defended their intentions as a friendly and non-offensive celebration of their Confederate heritage. Their as-yet loosely organized detractors aren't buying it, calling it hate. Thinly veiled, yet hate. More than a week later, emotions still run high. Multiple efforts are underway to counter the Confederate flag's message of supposed welcome, and the flaggers aren't backing down. Why does this flag mean so much to Richmond? Why does it, 150 years after Lincoln's successful binding up of our nation's wounds, continue to cause such pain, such pride? Why does our nation remain so divided 152 years after Colonel Ellsworth died trying to take that flag down?
The night they rolled Dixie down, and all the bells were ringing. The night they rolled Dixie down, and all the people were singing. They went la 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 la.
I'm with the Reverend Ben Campbell, pastor, director of Richmond Hill, and a frequent peace emissary between parties on some of the city's most controversial issues over the years. He also authored a recent well-received book, Richmond's Unhealed History, which was published last year. I'm also with Reverend Tyrone Nelson. He's pastor of 6th Mount Zion in the city, one of the city's most historic and significant African-American congregations. Pastor Nelson also is a member of the Henrico Board of Supervisors. And I'm also with Ron Moore. He's a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, though not here as an official representative of the group. He also was the first, is that right, Ron, the first? The first to protest at the VMFA in May of 2010 at the lack of a Confederate flag there because the property was initially founded and chartered as a Confederate monument and park. Guys, welcome. Thank you for being here. And, of course, this is kind of a tough subject to discuss, so this is hopefully we can keep it all on an even keel throughout. And I guess the first thing to ask, and maybe we can just sort of go around the table, is why is this flag, why is it so divisive? Why
so,
is it
Chris, what's the story here? There's a flag somebody's planning on putting up?
You haven't heard this?
I've been hearing about it, but I just thought if we stated the stated the topic that we were all talking about.
Well, we're talking, of course, and the topic, of course, again, just to review, is this Confederate flag. This is a group in town called that called themselves the Flaggers, and they have proposed putting a Confederate flag on a 50-foot pole near the interstate as a welcome to visitors to Richmond, ostensibly as part of the 150th anniversary celebrations. And it has obviously led to some consternation among parties who are opposed to the flag as a symbol of the city or a symbol of welcome. So that's sort of where we are. But again, I guess the question begged by this whole flag flap, if I can use the much used headline, I'm sure it'll get tired during this debate, is why is this flag still such a divisive symbol in our city? Maybe we can start with you, Pastor Campbell. Let you take the...
Oh, thank you, Dr. Dovey. I appreciate the opportunity for... Well, actually, what I think is Richmond's problem and the reason the flag causes a particularly large flap here is that we don't talk about our history enough effectively, and we don't talk about race enough in town. And we still have a very, very divided city, which is still suffering from some of the real long-term discrimination that our actually state invented in a way for the whole world. And because we don't trust each other in terms of having attempted to build an effective interracial society, and one that really is based on justice and mutual respect, we couldn't possibly not end up having a flap over the Confederate flag. And I think that's so anything like this, and I'm thinking back to when we were putting pictures on the flood wall back 10 years ago, anything like this is going to kick up everything that's not talked about, everything that's not faced, the segregation between our counties and the city, the failure to have public transportation that covers our city, the really kind of constant lack of respect and the bickering that is underneath so much of our common life doesn't have many places to come out. And this then kicks it all up. And of course, you know, the flag is a potentially very divisive issue, but it's not one we couldn't talk about if we were talking about other things.
So in other words, you're saying that it's munitions that are buried beneath the surface.
There's too much underneath.
This flag.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, all you got to do is throw a spark into this thing. People have so much they're not talking about. And, you know, I mean, anybody who deals honestly with race in Richmond sees the tinder that's lying around on the ground to be ignited at any moment, because we're not effectively dealing with our situation and we're pretending we don't have problems, and that's not the way to solve them.
Ron, you might have a really interesting perspective on this, simply because when you went out to, I guess protest would be the right word, the lack of a flag at the VMFA, it was because, as you said, in your mind, you see this as and in fact in the evidence that's at the State Archives, as a park. That is supposed to be a Confederate park, and so it's, to you, lacking there.
Yeah, I got into this, and probably while I'm sitting here, it kind of grew since 2010. While I have ancestors that, you know, obviously I'm wearing a Confederate flag, and I did that to kind of put it in the room. I knew, you know, that the gentleman here is...
Ron's wearing a hat.
Yeah, Confederate flag, which says, you know, Virginia Division, which I'm not related to, but we need to move on beyond it, to embrace history, to learn from it, all of it, emancipation, the whole nine yards. But to just to go back to a little bit, I want to make sure everyone's, I'm not part of Virginia Flaggers either. I protested because I live in a fan, and I was riding around, well, who are the nutwacks flying a Confederate flag off of the portico of a church behind the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts? And I'm like, that's just not going to fly, which it didn't. So I finally came in and said, well, what are you doing? What is this? And they said, well, it's a park. And I said, what do you mean it's a park? So I didn't know that the property is actually the R. E. Lee Camp Confederate Memorial Park. And that included a historic chapel, a museum, cannons, artifacts, and that was deeded to the state under contract with Virginia War Veterans. Immediately I was interested in that because I lost a company by contract which went to the Virginia Supreme Court. So I understand what a contract means. I know what a war veteran is. And so here you have a state piece of property that's contracting with Virginia war veterans perpetually for a state park. And part of that park was a Confederate flag. So that's how I got involved in it. And I protested it to bring attention to history in Virginia that's significant. And I'll show you, here's a...
Real quick, what sort of reactions did you get to your...
What was interesting there was only myself. I did not protest or bring a Confederate battle flag. I had one other person that, because I tried to separate the flag out of the contract issue and out of a deed, because deeds are important. Historic deeds are important, and you can't just go paving over American history. So the reaction there was very interesting. A state officer, I assume was one, came up at the end. And her crony, after yelling at me, said, "Your days are over. You're no longer welcome here." Pretty interesting comment. Here's a picture just to show you guys. This is about nine different black Confederate veterans who were on the property, actually at a reunion, historic reunions that took place on the BMFA grounds between the North and the South. So generally, they're not talked about at all. And that's a lot of controversy in that, but I just brought that to show you that it wasn't even, it was a very interesting crowd on that piece of property. So that's kind of how I got involved in it. Then Virginia Flaggers got involved in it, and they kind of stuck to the Confederate flag issue, returned it to a church. Well, it doesn't belong there because it wasn't on the church. So the VMFA always kind of won that argument because it wasn't historically correct. That's when I got more involved in it to say, wait a second, it's more complicated than that. So, it is a kindling box, to your point, and what I'm hoping is that Richmond, both the black community and the white community, can somehow come to a compromise where we accept significant American history. Without the Confederacy, there would be no emancipation. The black narrative would be gone without it. So unless the two sides warred, slavery might have gone on for years and years and years and years. So all of these are significant events. Wonderful historic characters are out of this. Your abolitionists, Garrison, Frederick Douglass, Lysander Spooner, all of those political writers who didn't even agree with each other at all. We should be able to learn from that history in a positive manner without evoking the racist misuse of that Confederate flag. And I have some more points to talk about the misuse of flags.
Well, let's before
I want to stop there just to kind of say where I'm coming from on it, which is not a racist use, and I do understand the contention on it.
And I think at this point, I guess Pastor Nelson, your thoughts on this? How can we embrace this together, or is this an unembraceable symbol?
You know, I think it's just so much that goes into it, and you know, I think hanging a flag off of 95 is not going to be a good thing, and I don't think it's going to be. I don't think it will invoke any type of intelligent conversation. You know, I think what it will do is further add to the divisiveness that is already that we see in so many other issues in our community. Do I think that Richmonders are intelligent enough to have healthy dialogue about serious issues? I think we are. I think there are a lot of groups around here that do it. I think even at Richmond Hill, there are a lot of conversations that happen that are significant for our community. There is something about this place, this city. I go back to what Dr. Campbell said initially. It's almost like we try to ignore that we have differences here. And either we try to act like everything is okay and we're healed or we allow divisive conversations to show themselves, whether it be in our schools or our communities or et cetera. So the flag, I am certain there is, there's some very legitimate history that has made Richmond, significant to a certain degree. But particularly to minority communities, most people, when they see the Confederate flag, they think racism. And now I'm sitting here thinking, I just looked at your head, and the first image that comes to my head is John Grisham wrote a book called A Time to Kill. And it's a movie with Samuel Jackson in it. And you know, that I'm just thinking. It was the opening scene is about this little girl, African American family, two drunk white men take her, beat her, rape her, and the symbolic gesture was a big Confederate flag hanging off the back of a pickup truck. And they riding around, they tied her body to a back of a pickup truck and dragged her. And she ended up almost deformed. So I'm thinking that from a movie, that's the first image I think when I think the Confederate flag. And so those are the images that African Americans, not all African Americans, but when you don't, most of the time, I live in Verona, which is a very diverse community. And when I see people riding around,
good old boys.
When I see people riding around in Verona with the Confederate flag, it's not to intelligently have a conversation about who we are. You know, so it you know, this is a very sensitive subject. I just think that the flag hanging off the highway is just going to flame it. It's not, you know, not too soon.
I was working with the Sons of Confederate Veterans at a piece of property actually right around from your church. I'm not going to identify it, but it's pretty close. It's a significant piece of property. To erect a monument to deal with, to put Lincoln and to put Jefferson Davis on equal ground. All of them, the abolitionists, Lincoln's cabinet, you know, his War Department, the generals of the South. So people could come there on equal ground and listen to what those people said for themselves. To make it equal. So, I mean, to your point, that I agree, it has to be in the right context. So I can definitely see where it's inflammatory because we're not at the right context in general in this city to deal with it. I traveled 1,200 miles to do that. So it was a very expensive piece of property and it fell through. But it wasn't just to raise a Confederate flag, even though I'm partial to the side of the Confederacy. It was to put them on equal ground with their own words. That's all of them, like the Freedmen's Bureau. The abuses and misuses of that kindled racism in the South through the way that the whites were suppressed through Reconstruction, which caused the original Ku Klux, which has nothing to do with the Confederate flag, actually at all. It was a Christian flag that they used, and they manipulated the carpetbaggers and the scallywags, as they called them, and also the Union League, to take back control of their civil government because it was lost. They had no rights. So there's a lot of different understanding that could come out of that in the black community and the white community if we would allow it a chance to speak without the animosity. Idiots that kill people out of racist misuse of a flag like that are morons. I thought I would take a moment and bring up a contemporary use or misuse that you may be familiar with because it struck me as like exactly relevant. And that's the Coalition of American African American pastors that came out against the NAACP endorsing gay marriage, which is a significant event. So I'm going to quote what they said.
Now, what is this from again?
From the Coalition of African American Pastors. That's you can look them up at CAAP. .org, you'll find Catholic priests, you'll find the Family Research Center, which was labeled as a hate group. What I'm bringing this up for is it's about the misuse of a historic event such as the MLK movement. And it's a quote from the founder, which is President William Owens. The NAACP has abandoned its historic responsibility to speak for and safeguard the civil rights movement. He goes on to say, "We who marched with Reverend King did not march 1 inch or 1 mile to promote same-sex marriage." Obviously, we know all about the contentions of that. What's happened is other groups have come along, like the LGBT movement, and have actually hijacked the Martin Luther King movement against the wishes of the people that marched with which marched with him. And so my point in bringing this up a little bit is to say, Can the black community not relate to the misuse of a historic flag? Does not, what's the word I'm looking for? Legitimize the proper use of the flag, such as Susan Hathaway even flying a flag from a pole outside of the other issue that we're discussing. Because that group.
Well, now, real quick,
short circuit. I'm just throwing it out on the table.
I think we need to hear some response to this. Reverend Campbell, you want to take a shot at it?
Yeah, I hear you, Mr. Ron. So I want to come back to the MLK piece, but I'll let you go ahead first before.
Oh, my God.
Let's hear.
I'm
going to throw that on the table about misuses of an image.
If there's anything that this conversation proves so far, it's that there's a whole lot of stuff under the table that's explosive, that's not talked about, and that the very nature of our racial division that is undealt with, and it's not, division is really not the word. The word is long-term oppression. If there's anything about that, what it does is it continues to influence, imbalance, and poison every conversation. And if you can't figure out what's going on, it comes up all the time. So, you know, some basic facts, you know, basically we had white slavery in Virginia before we had black slavery. Most people don't know that. So there's a lot of oppression to go around in Virginia. And there are a lot of white people and a lot of black people who feel oppressed in this state. And there's some good reasons for it. And if you want to look at what happens, in many ways they got pitted against each other. In fact, if you look at the history of the Civil War, as you know, there are a whole lot of just plain old working white folks whose officers sent them into charge in cannons because they really didn't give too much of a darn about what their life was worth. And there's a lot of stuff that happened there that's really bad stuff. I mean, I'm seventh generation Virginian. My granddaddy grew up next to Robert E. Lee in Lexington, Virginia, and I've lived my life in this thing. But we have to, you know, our job, and if we don't do it, we're going to stay like this. Our job is to tell enough of the truth about our history and to clean ourselves enough so that we can actually have a decent culture. You know, so I will tell you this, and I'd say this to our flaggers right now, you know, if you guys will carry that flag across the Chesterfield County line and say we're going to integrate the schools of Chesterfield County with the schools of Richmond City, I will carry the flag with you. That is, if you're willing to use that flag to stand for justice and to stand for a healthy Virginia community which respects who we all are. In fact, we're all kin to each other. We know that, too. If you're willing to carry the flag to stand for what the best things are that we believe in, you know, I'll march right up there with you. I will carry the flag with you. I will put a gun over my shoulder. I really will. I'm serious. Because if we're concerned about justice and right, then we need to do that. Now, we cannot lie about the fact that the Confederacy, and, you know, I'm sorry, but I've been doing this as long as you have to, that the Confederate States of America basically existed to protect and preserve slavery. I'm not going to get into that argument, but that is my position. I do not think the war would have occurred without it. I know what happened in history before it, and I think it's poisonous. My family was Unionist. They wanted to stay in the Union. They did not want to join the Confederacy, although some of them ended up fighting just like all the rest of Virginians did. And because that's a fact, it's not why everybody fought, you know, but because that's a fact, it really has poisoned what might have been proper symbols for a culture. And we've just got to take that.
What's interesting about what you just brought up is this idea that, and I was thinking about it before we, I guess, Ron, before you started, beyond, I guess, just the symbology of the Confederacy, is when you look at a group like, say, the Tea Party, which has been a divisive political party in both Virginia as well as nationally, one of the things that they've done is they have taken some symbols that for a long time have been American symbols. Mm-hmm. They've been bipartisan symbols, don't tread on me. You know, the idea of the snake divided were things that, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, there was a bumper sticker on the back of my dad's bike. I identify with that symbol as something that to me just means 4th of July. And so it to me is kind of difficult when you see it becoming identified just with one political party and one that refuses to see any side in between or at the other extreme as being anything other than wrong.
Yeah.
That's why I brought and this up to show a difference where different.
Well, what I wonder, though, I guess is you know, and then we have Reverend Campbell. You're talking about the idea of the Confederate flag is something that obviously now has these negative connotations, but symbols.
I got chased and beat by people with Confederate flags when I was a boy. I mean, it wasn't just white people that got beat up. There were some nasty people using the symbol wrong.
And I think that
really is true. Right. So, I mean, that happened to me, and I'm not.
And I think that's the challenge.
But symbols change is an interesting thing.
Right. And he's right. Ron's right about that.
It goes beyond the I don't want to say it goes beyond the symbol because that's what we're talking about. But let me go back, and I think a part of – we were just – here a couple of weeks ago, my brain cells. we were just talking about race a couple of weeks ago.
We had Pastor Nelson on the show.
And one of the things that I remember saying then, I bring up here, and it is to have any type of conversation that will be healthy, there has to be a certain level of trust in the dialogue. And I think I probably am an open-minded guy,
about as open-minded a guy as you're willing to come on this show.
I'm willing to listen and hear, but I think one of the scary things is when we begin to have conversations, and I think there's just a lot of mistruth and misunderstandings, and when you talk about Martin Luther King, whatever that group is that you just brought up, I think there's a very unhealthy. So if you understand King's movement, you know that King's movement ultimately was grounded in civil and human rights. Whether you agree with the LGBT community and the rights to be in relationship, whether same sex or not, that's what the argument is about. It's about having the same rights as others. So it is a human rights issue. So for a group of persons to come out and say that Martin Luther King, no, that wasn't the issue then. The issue then was, can we use the same restrooms as other people? Can we sit in the same place and on the bus? We've moved beyond that now. And so the conversation is about human rights. And when you have, if there's not a certain level of truth that is shared, a certain level of understanding, if there is a way of skewing the truth, and I'm not saying any way you're doing that, but you have to be honest. So on one hand, yes, there's a strong legacy. There would not be emancipation without Confederacy, but there's a lot of stuff that also goes with the Confederacy. And you gotta, that's what people are gonna see when they see that flag. And is that what we want people to see when they come through Richmond? The only flag that ought to be hanging is the United States flag and the state of Virginia flag. Those two represent who we are in this totality. Why put something that can actually inflame people or put a symbol that may mean a lot to a small group, but the majority sees that symbol as something that does not represent this area. Now, right before we were coming over, Tyron and I was talking about this, a lot of people who are here in Richmond now are not lifelong Richmonders. We have a lot of transplant people here. I grew up here in Richmond. So when people say that Richmond is the capital of the Confederacy, it's just Richmond to me. So all of that goes with it. I went to Robert E. Lee Elementary School. So Robert E. Lee, which is a defunct school now, but never.
Condo, I believe.
Well, I was there. It was a condo. When I was there, we never talked about Rob Lee.
I should, by the way, real quickly mention that we have Tyron Bay in the room. He's been listening. He's a Richmond Public School teacher and a friend of Tyrone Nelson. Tyrone was not talking to Tyron in his head. He was talking to somebody.
Physical body.
So anyway, I'm sorry to have interrupted.
But the city, what I'm saying is I went to Robert E. Lee Elementary School and cannot remember one conversation about Robert E. Lee, other than in the history book. That's being a Richmonder here. But for transplants, having to say that this place is the capital of Confederacy is a area of tension. And I think if that flag goes up, we're going to end up back in the news for something that is not a positive thing. That's just,
And real quick, just as a little station break, where this is RVA Report, and I've been with Reverend Ben Campbell, Reverend Tyrone Nelson, and Ron Moore. Again, I'm with Reverend Ben Campbell. He's pastor director up at Richmond Hill. Reverend Tyrone Nelson, he's pastor of Six Mount Zion and also a Henrico politician. And then Ron Moore, he's a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, not here representing them, and not a member of the Flaggers, it should be mentioned either. As we come back, I'd like to sort of tell an interesting story that somewhat plays off of, I guess, this. Ron, you were telling this story of this memorial that you were involved in. It's a very interesting thing. A couple of years back, I was working for a gentleman who he'd asked me to help him to assemble his memoirs. He was the fellow who was behind the Lincoln statue down at Tredegar, which, of course, took all unbelievable amount of flack from all parties, it seemed like. The Times-Dispatch investigated his finances. The Sons of Confederate Veterans protested the statue, and this poor gentleman, Bob Klein, couldn't understand why. And in the process of the research, I'm going through all of his papers, and I find what was the original concept for the statue. It's very interesting. The original concept for the statue and the original location was supposed to have been behind the White House of the Confederacy. And the statue, as originally conceptualized, was supposed to have been at Lincoln and Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy, sitting on a bench together, facing one another in silent meditation, I guess. And I, in the course of putting these memoirs together, which, by the way, are unpublished, I spoke with some representatives from the Sons of Confederate Veterans who'd been involved in protesting this statue. And they said, well, there was a long pause when I told them about this. He says, huh. I think I would have supported that. I could have been behind that, even though it's not historically accurate. I think I could have, that would have resolved a lot of the conflict we had with it. And it's funny because when I talked then to Bob Klein about it, he said, well, we thought it would be too divisive. And again, there's two parties here. Both of them are thinking on their own without talking to one another. And it leads to I guess, argument, or in this case, the renting of an airplane that flew over top of the dedication condemning Mr. Klein and his statue. So could have been headed off at the pass, maybe, and might have had something that was better.
And what's also interesting about that, the Sons of Confederate Veterans produced a statue of Jefferson Davis, who adopted a mulatto child, and they rejected it. So what you get into is, again, the complete amount of animosity that can't seem to come to the table in the city. So I do agree with Tyrone that I think in a proper context, this can work. I think that if we see, the South was under a military occupation. Richmond was military district number one. The whites had no rights. You know, so the Ku Klux reacted to the military occupation. That's just history. And I don't think it has to be divisive. That's why I brought up the MLK movement and the LGBT movement, taking on the MLK story, because it's a modern group using the historic civil rights march. So now that's divisive in itself there. And they have a pretty strong statement about it. So what I think here is that this can solve itself in a productive manner. I do believe that. I don't think there's any problem with talking about abolitionists or any other aspect of the Civil War. I don't think it's a problem talking about plantation owners, slave owners, or anything else, because it's history and we can learn in a productive level from that history. I hope that people that see that flag realize that, to your point, the Tea Party doesn't represent that original flag. They've used it, but it's not the original flag. So don't confuse the two, but I do also understand people have misused it. So that's a problem as well. So how do we get beyond that to the table to make it work in this city so we can profit from this? Gettysburg had just a little bit of changing the subject up to Gettysburg.
Well, before you do, I want to ask, because we should probably get to that.
Yeah.
But Reverend Campbell, I wanted to ask you, and it looked like you had a point to make yourself too, and feel free to make that point as well. But who needs to be at the table with this conversation? Because it seems like there is a conversation that needs to happen. It does happen in some quarters and sometimes even publicly. I guess Ed Ayers, the president over at University of Richmond, has attempted this with the Future of Richmond's Past, I think is the name of his symposiums. Who needs to be talking about this? How do we make it into a general conversation? How general a conversation does it need to be? Can it be a healthy conversation?
Well, I've looked at this thing for a long time, and I think that the problem is that you can't discuss history apart from your current reality, and that's really where we are. So what really happens is we're discussing history in our heads, but emotionally we're discussing our current reality. And our current reality, I mean, understand this, in 1776, we had a Declaration of Independence, and we fought a war of independence that made half the population free and half the population in a totalitarian slave state. So our independence movement was for only half of our population in Richmond. And that's not the story we tell in our schools. It's not the basis we operate from. If we taught the truth about that, we would then, most of us, be in a movement to make that right. But let me just go on. Sure. So we can't tell the truth about our history, partly because we can't tell the truth about our present. And the truth of our present's pretty rough and pretty rocky in many ways. Has it gotten better? Yeah, we're sitting around this table. And I will tell you, we would not have been sitting around this table this way 10, 15, 20 years ago. In fact, we couldn't have this conversation with the quality we are.
And this has been fairly civil. I've seen some forehead slapping here and there, but
we're all in the same ball game here. We do know what the name of the ball game is, but we've got to get real about the ball game. The fact of the matter is, unless there is some sense of earnest attempt to remedy the injustice and the deliberate racism that still perpetuates itself within the fabric of our community, and I'm talking about jurisdictional lines, and I'm talking about issues of housing and employment, and I'm talking about jails, and I'm talking about transportation, and a general feeling that just continues to poison our life.
This is a legacy, is what
this
you're
is,
saying.
Unless we make common cause around that and want to say, look, the ideals that we all proclaimed are the ones we really want to see happen, we're going to end up fighting those feelings on our history discussion. And therefore, the ability to objectify, to make it so that I can listen to somebody else's idea about what a flag means without getting freaked out, the ability to kind of move into that level of thought is going to be very difficult, because I'm really still dealing at the gut level with the sense that things aren't right. And I don't quite know how to tell the truth except to tell the truth in this way. And it will never get better until we hold the real discussion about the real issues, and then we can talk properly about a diversity thing here, which is that different people see a flag in different ways.
I think that we have the conversations. I guess the question is, who comes to the table? You know, I go back to what the initial focus of this conversation is about. And the initial focus of this conversation is what are our feelings about this flag hanging off of 95? I don't think that I can't see this city, not in my lifetime, being okay with that. You know, I mean, it might happen after I'm gone, but there are conversations that are had. You know, and we have come a long way. There are groups that are multicultural, that are sensitive to each other, that have bonded with each other, have learned from each other. That we have those models in this city right now, but
it goes back to what Dr. Campbell just shared. You got to get down to the gut of it. And the gut of it goes beyond stitching. It goes beyond that square cutout with that red, white, and blue. It just goes beyond it. It goes to a deeper cultural conversation. And there's still so much. You ride around Richmond and see why it's hard for us to have a conversation. Go ride through Gilpin Court with that Confederate flag and see what type of reaction you're going to get.
I've been through there, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I get the animosity towards it, too, so I think that there's a valid point with that.
But guess what? It goes deeper than the flag.
Yeah,
you got what I'm saying? The flag is just material. And though it's a story behind it, it goes deeper than that. And that's the challenge. And so you hang this flag off of 95, and you're going to have people riding up and down 95 processing what that means. And for you, it may mean embracing the Confederate history that played a part in Richmond's legacy. But for the majority, it's going to be, you know, what this 2013, you know. I mean, is Richmond really trying to send that message?
And I should step in real quick and say that Ron, in agreeing to come on, he made clear that he was not a supporter of the flying of it on 95.
Oh.
Felt that was not necessarily the place for it.
All right, well, sorry.
However.
I'm not a total good guy here. What the problem is once you do it, all of this stuff comes into context. So, I mean, you can look at my blogs over here and people who bash it. I mean, I let them have it with history of facts and hypocrisy and the fact that, you know, when you're given a choice of a 75,000 strong army that's going to march in your front yard in about 2 days, you're going to fight them. And I don't care what you were, you know. The blacks were actively involved in supporting the Confederacy. Now, I know there's many different sides of that, but there were women, there were Jews, Mexicans, Indians, all actively in the Confederate government. The Confederate government was, the Secretary of War and Secretary of State was Judah P. Benjamin, the most powerful Jew in North America to date. No one wants to talk about him. So, you know, we need to get beyond it. So I think that Susan and the Flaggers are reacting because of groups like the, you know, movement that I've talked about over here that are standing on monuments.
Susan has been their spokesperson.
Yeah, Susan is a founder of that, but here's one I'm right there.
And I guess you brought some pictures with you. I don't know who this is, and we really can't describe it on radio. This is not good radio.
Yeah. But this is the one of the gentlemen that's in the movement that I mentioned that's on top of a museum in Charleston trespassing and vandalizing a Southern monument. So they taken upon themselves to make it divisive rather than treat it in the way that we were just discussing. Sorry for the noise.
Yep, there's some. That's a poster B-roll.
I apologize, but now you're making me have to take it back. Here's the problem, though. When you think about, you speak of the Confederacy and you speak of it in terms of the war, the battle, its history. When you talk Confederacy to an African American now, is not about the Civil War. Confederacy lingers beyond that. It lingers to Southern states that mistreated black people because they wanted to keep black people enslaved. You got what I'm saying? And so it goes beyond just a conversation about the war. It goes beyond just, you know, it goes beyond that. The symbols of it carry over even now. And so it is a symbol of oppression. You get what I'm saying? And so that's what the struggle is. The struggle is it goes beyond the mid, you know, 19th century. And it is found its way to penetrate into the 20th century and the 21st century, you know.
Right, because of the misuse of the flag. And I get that. And that's the problem that we have is how do you deal with the flag. They're reacting to what's going on because this phenomenon, or I'll call it anti-Confederate bashing, is happening all across the United States by non-governmental associations, whether it's the NAACP, Anti-Defamation League, Southern Poverty Law Center, highly funded groups that are stoking these flames on purpose. So
we're getting beyond the symbology
there's a lot of money behind the manipulation of race, which is oppressing blacks and oppressing whites.
So might that deal with the folks who basically have decided that our president wasn't born in the United States of America? Would it have to do with the completely irrational treatment of the president of the United States because he's black by maybe 20 to 30% of the House of Representatives? I mean, we're in a very volatile situation here, and you're talking about highly funded groups who are motivated by race, but I'm watching them take over the state government in North Carolina, and I'm watching some crazy stuff happen right now, which we've got to be honest about. It's interesting to hear you say this other piece.
The hate is really exploding. Hate is becoming a brand.
Yeah.
So to talk about what you're saying, it's very valid. It's a very big problem now. I mean, honestly, when the white man went up and shot up the Indian church,
mm-hmm.
It immediately turned into the Confederate. This is really bad. I was like, this is not good, and it's being stoked all the time. Us as Richmond, but kind of pull it back to this, the Confederacy can be a valid economy for this town. Gettysburg had, 12,000 visitors up there. This isn't even an issue up there right now. I mean, they're flying Confederate flags, Union flags, having battles out in the field, statues to both, going to beer and drinking beer together, and they're making money at it. So I hope that we can get to the point where we... in the right context, and I get where you're coming from there, where we sit down and say, okay, how do we deal with the black Confederates that are standing right here with medals on their side that didn't evacuate the Confederate armies? They're right there. How do we deal with them? How do we deal with Judah P. Benjamin that was Jewish that ran the Confederate Secret Service?
Well, and I think maybe because we also have to wrap this up,
sure.
Need to ask, I think, all of you, is there a proper time and place to display this in a historical context, and what is that in this town in a way that doesn't create this sort of explosion of emotion? Is there a way?
I think when we can become a healed community, and I'm not sure, again, that can happen without some real honesty. And kudos to the Black Confederates. But we still live, it's 2013, and race, you just think even about this Trayvon. You have people saying that the Trayvon Martin case had nothing to do with race. It had everything to do with race. We want to lie and say that, race is not an issue. The president's skin color is a issue. That's about race. And so, and I shared this with Chris and Charlie when we were here talking a couple of weeks ago. I ran and won an election in 2011, 400 years, not a person of color ever elected in the district that I serve. I had people minimizing me as a human being because of my race. And so it's about race, and the Confederacy is a symbol of racism. And so till we can get to a place where we can be honest and have some sense of healing, the flag is always going to some degree, carry that connotation.
So
it's unfortunate, because there may be, Ron seems like a good-hearted guy who really is trying to share the story, but the symbol of the story is heavily drenched in a lot of animosity.
Ron, is there a place to display it that is an appropriate place to display it? And then we'll finish with Campbell.
Yes, I think, like I said, there was some property.
Well, remember, we've got to wrap this up. So
there was some property near your church where I was trying to do something similar to that, to put Lincoln and all of them on equal ground, flags and all, get over it, and move on in the proper historical context. I also do understand that Susan at Virginia Flaggers, they are reacting to a wider movement that's going on across the country, and they're tired of this and feel like a victim as well. And so that's why you're seeing flags go up like this. So please keep that in mind when you consider what they're doing as well, that they are celebrating their heritage. I know them, they're not racist, and I wouldn't speak to them if they were. So, but I still get where this bigger issue is.
And Reverend Campbell, remembering that we need to wrap it up.
Yeah, when I hear the story of the Susan and the Confederate and the flaggers, you know, it reminds me of a joke we used to tell about when we were kids, about one guy that used to shout out to the enemy troops across the way, and as soon as they saw him, he'd duck and his buddy would get shot. You know, if there's people getting shot emotionally, who are simply dealing with Southern pride behind the flag as the way of doing that, it's not because of the flag itself. It's because of what else is around, and it'll be because of active racism, because of oppression, because of some real sense of the Confederacy, and maybe because of some prejudice that's not appropriate. As 8 year old, my proudest possession was a Southern battle hat with a Confederate flag on it. I wasn't standing for anything except for the fact that I was from Virginia, and when they sang Dixie, I stood up and shouted. I was just a little white boy growing up in the South like that. I didn't have any particular animosity and wasn't even aware of racial issues in my own head at that point in time. So I can see a purity, you know, in what I felt then, and I don't despise that. But I do know that we're in a much more complex thing. The day we can hang the flag will be the day that, you know, the county manager of Chesterfield, the county manager of Henrico, county manager of Hanover, and the city manager of Richmond stand together and say, we're going to build a single community that is not going to be based on race. And the day they do that, we can do anything we want in this town and be proud of it. But until that time, we may not be able to.
All right, guys, this has been a very tough conversation here. I appreciate all of you doing this.
And the
Reverend Campbell may have created a new war by calling the city's mayor, I guess, a city manager.
Oh, sorry.
We've got a new form of government around here.
Administrator.
Anyway, so again, guys, thank you very much for coming. Reverend Ben Campbell, he's pastor, director of Richmond Hill. Reverend Tyrone Nelson, he's pastor of Six Mount Zion. And Ron Moore, he is the first person to have protested outside the VMFA for the lack of a Confederate flag, not a flagger, and not supportive necessarily of that cause. But this has been, again, a very good, I hope, conversation, but also a difficult one. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. When I lay my burden down, glory, glory, hallelujah. When I lay my burden down, I'm gonna meet my dear old mother when I lay my burden down. I'm gonna meet my dear old mother when I lay my burden down. Glory, glory, hallelujah, when I lay my burden down. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
And that's RVA Report for Thursday, August 15th, 2013. Thank you again for listening. I'm Chris Dovey. RVA Report is co-produced by myself, Charlie Dirador, and Brittany Tracy. The Richmond Public Media News team is Brittany Tracy, Cameron Vigliano, and Onofrio Castiglia. News keeps happening, which means there will be plenty more to talk about next week right here on RVA Report. Join us.
Glory, glory, hallelujah, when I lay my burden down.
on the Danville train. Till Stalin's cavalry came and tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May 10th, Richmond had fell. It was a time I remember oh so well. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the people were singing. They went la 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 la. She called to me, "Where'd you quick come see? But there goes Robert E. Lee. Now I don't mind chopping wood, and I don't care if the money's no good. You take what you need and you leave the rest, but they should never have taken the very best. The night they drove old Dixie down, all the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, all the people were singing. They went la 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 la." Like my father before me, I'm a working man. Took a rebel stand. Well, he was just 18, proud and brave, but a Yankee made him in his grave. I swear by the blood below my feet, they can't make a cane rise up when he's in defeat. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the bells were ringing. The night they drove old Dixie down, and all the people were singing. They went la 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 la